Good afternoon, we're back, or on, I should say. Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown, almost hour. Lots of interesting things I want to talk about today. This Steve Bannon pick with cabinet position and Trump's administration. Interesting, I think, on a number of levels. There's been some transcripts now released with a conversation with a Vatican think tank on capitalism, his contributions into that. We'll talk about that. Media in general, the responsibility of media, and why we have this divide. As we know, the liberal media. Well, I think the liberal media is dangerous, but I think the conservative media is equally so, because, as I say, we're all biased. Now, fortunately, I don't know, maybe fortunately, there are some who are admitting it more. I think Breitbart, which is where you get Bannon from that organization, knows they're a conservative news source. InfoWars knows they're a conservative news source. Fox News should know they're a conservative news source, and they should act as such. But this kind of now, it's who's leading who, and where is the truth? I think that's the question, and Facebook falling prey to that as well. Talking about all of that and more, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I mentioned at the intro the power of the media, and I think that, you know, we've always had the ability to sway simply because of the platform. Now, yeah, you look at television, you look at, first off, the kings of media platforming over the past 50 years. TV being the top, radio, newspapers being somewhere behind that, but still in a very respected, some degree of inherent understanding that there's truth to be told, and that truth will be told through these mediums. That's kind of the trajectory of media through the 20th century. And I studied media, so this was my discipline. This is what I worked at, took very seriously. My college education was not something that I just kind of checked off the list. It was something I worked very hard and tried to learn as much of this as I could, because I, from the time I was 8 years old, this is what I was. I embraced this even then. I was an information junkie. I wanted to learn as much as I could, and then really understand how all of this translates. And how do you use this opportunity? And this is what we were very carefully crafted to us in my media training, was you have to be responsible. Because you have great power, and with great power comes great responsibility. Not that Spider-Man was teaching my class, but we were there to understand that there are ways to do this properly with ethics, and then there's a way to do it with every absence of such. So you look at the trajectory of media for the past 50 years. Television, we trust these guys, they're telling us what we're supposed to know. But you think about the concentration, you know, we talk about who's controlling the media. My goodness, until recently, very recently, 10 years, the past 10 years, media was controlled by only a very small handful of sources. You talk about media control, and you ask yourself, well, where's the truth? we just had to trust. And generally speaking, the big three networks were kind of saying the same thing. Generally. Without a whole lot of variance, you kind of got that. And it was kind of, which guy do you like more? Who has better hair or a better voice? And you just migrated to that newscast. That's kind of much of what the latter half of the 20th century was all about. Then something interesting happened toward the beginning of the 2000s. As we began to emerge into internet technology, and now we flip this thing all around. And now instead of being three sources, there's 300,000 sources. And of those 300,000, there's a few thousand that probably has some degree of prominence, so to speak. And then of that few thousand that have the prominence, there's a smaller handful, but still much more than three, maybe 300, who have some sort of real regularity of influence. And these individuals are, I believe, generally in the influence business more than they are in the truth-telling business. So when you look at these left and right sources, like I say, I read them all. My Twitter feed, I've said this many times, ranges from Mother Jones to Alex Jones. Those are two extremes. Mother Jones, very left-leaning. Alex Jones, almost off of the chart right-leaning. But what we have is this, it's not so much now a who can get the scoop, right? That's how media used to be. Who's scooping somebody else because they got the story first? Oh, that they scooped us, right? That was like the, nobody wanted to be scooped back in the day. They didn't want the other media outlet to get the story first. And that was kind of the competition. There's truth to be told, who's telling it first. Not even who's telling it best, who's there first. And there's still some of that, I think there's a leftover competition in that to some degree, even to this day, but it's really no longer about who's first. Nor is it really who's best. It's how are you manipulating who you have to the point of convincing them that what you're saying is gospel. And what the other person is saying, regardless of who said it when, it's a lie. So that's kind of where we've evolved in this massive conglomeration of choices. Now it really comes down to, do you believe my truth? And do you also believe that they are telling you a lie? And I think that's a dangerous road to travel for a couple of reasons. One is, it's manipulative, and you are being dishonest, and especially if you're doing it with the understanding that you're in business. I mean, that's the thing too. I mean, please realize, it's a news business. Redbox Media is a business. We're all in business. We have to survive. We have to make money. We have to do what we do. We try to do it differently with radical generosity and being connected to partners on the ground and giving half of our revenue away and all the things that we do in so many different capacities. But others aren't like that. They're not as altruistic as we attempt to be. They're there simply to make money. But there's an interesting thing that happens in this game, and that is when somebody sees that they actually have the influence to sway someone's thought, now thought leadership is the competition. Who's leading the thoughts? Who's leading that pack with the greatest degree of influence? So when you see what has emerged, especially in this election, where Steve Bannon from Breitbart was the strategist in the big push on this election, when Trump supporters latched the tightest, when it was there's no turning back, and then hell or high water, they were getting to the voting booth. That happened under Bannon, that wave, that surge, and so no wonder this is why the president-elect is saying he's going to be my chief strategist. Because that influence of keeping that type of dynamic there that says we are so devoted and so connected because someone knows how to compel that story, that's a little bit interesting. Now, I've said I'm not going to be the president's critic. I'm not going to sit here to look at everything in a skeptical eye. I don't want to do that. I want to be a citizen, a respectful citizen. I want to respect the role of president, just as I have under President Obama, even when there were things that I disagreed with. We discussed those things, but I still respected the presidency as I always have. But I will say this, it's not out of disrespect, it's just out of, this is interesting. You got a guy who's pretty clever at manipulating his brand of media into this us against them mentality. We're the truth tellers, they're the liars. Oh, listen to the rhetoric in the campaign. What did you hear? Liar, 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 right? You can't trust anything they say. The left has no integrity. Everything is a lie. And if that's how we have to win, by basically saying the other side's lying to you, that's disturbing to me, right? And I know that the one side is won, I get that, but I'm saying even to the point now where it's, well, let's keep this campaign going. And not the campaign for re-election, but the campaign for the hearts and minds and the loyalty of the country based on spinning this story into what it is. Because Bannon's proven that he's effective at that. Proven that he's effective at it through Breitbart, proven that he's effective at it through this campaign, and now stepping into this role as chief advisor, it's very interesting. Now, I was made aware of and I'm not sure when this meeting took place, but apparently kind of a think tank sort of discussion, which happens frequently, that the Vatican sponsors and hosts, and wasn't that Pope Francis was there, but there were advisors there and media types and all of this, where Bana was, I guess, tapped as a, because of his wide-reaching media influence, to consult at this. And there's a transcript. He says some interesting things that I want to get into that. More to come in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I've been telling you about Stephen Bannon, Breitbart guy, now chief advisor and certainly the advisor on the Trump campaign, which really kind of galvanized. I think that may have been the word I was looking for in the last segment when I couldn't find what I was trying to say. This galvanization, it's like, nothing is going to stop this train. That happened under Bannon, and now we see him stepping into this advisor role, and what does that mean? Well, there's a transcript that's on my Facebook page, Leo C. Brown, find me there if you want to look at it, that is of a meeting, and apparently, from what I gather, Bannon's talking like a Catholic. Now, he's been criticized, and there have been Catholics who have been outspoken, as I posted on my Facebook page as well, about the Franciscans who say this assertion that he makes of the church only being pro-immigrant because it pads our falling numbers. That's the reason why we're opening our doors to the immigrant, so we can maintain some degree of influence. Yeah, I mean, see, that's what influencers think. Because if your game is nothing but influence, if you're there to do nothing but capture as many sheep as you can, and not in a finding the lost sheep way, but taking the flock, right? Sheep stealing. If you're looking at bringing someone to your side of thinking, you're going to assume that that's what everybody else is doing. So I think it's interesting to hear what people criticize, because generally it's what their biggest flaw is anyway, which I'll hold the mirror myself, by the way. But when you look at this type of language against the church, if he is Catholic, which I'm guessing he is, it's no wonder, because we criticize our institution all the time. There is a healthy degree of critique, and then there's that which is simply just inane. It's certainly not productive to suggest anything of that nature. But anyway, in this think tank transcript, I hear Bannon saying some very interesting things, because he sounds like a Reaganomics sort of conservative. And if you've read Laudato Si, you're going to hear a very sharp critique of this type of capitalism. It's not necessarily Reagan by name, but this trickle-down economics that was part of the Reagan era and also into the first Bush administration, this was essentially a failed economic policy. The belief that because the rich are richer, they're going to either be A, more benevolent, or B, more industrious to allow more stuff to happen, simply hasn't proven to be an effective strategy. And when you look at what Pope Francis says in the encyclical Laudato Si, which he was criticized for, not so much this, but more about the global warming concept, he refers to this trickle-down economics that it did, if anything trickled down, it trickled down from the U.S. down to South America, right? So it did come from North America to South America to Argentina, where he saw what appeared to be a failed economic policy, because it did not boost the middle class. It did not prevent poverty of the lower class. It simply was, again, a get richer situation. So, capitalism in and of itself can be good. And I know the Acton Institute, which is quoted in this transcript as well, is part of that good that is at least trying to say there's social responsibility among capitalism, and especially entrepreneurship, because if you are an entrepreneur, you've been given a higher calling, because now it's that, back what I said about even the media, with great power comes great responsibility. And now that you have the means to do this, you now have a responsibility to use it properly, with the understanding that, yeah, you can employ others. You can be responsible with natural resources, or whatever resources you're happen to have to use. You can prove that there's a social responsibility component to what you're doing, and a very sincere component when it comes to protecting humanity, you know, upholding human dignity. Are you paying fair wages? Are you treating people fairly? Are you including the opportunity for advancement? Are you doing all of these things within your organization that really can build a solid workplace and opportunities for others? Are you growing this in ways that prevent the challenges of an assumed economic structure that is nothing more than an outline that never proves positive. At least this is what Laudato Si suggests. So when I hear Bannon talking to the Vatican, even referring to Pope Francis, and talking about this capitalism that he sees as responsible, and then basically saying it's trickle down, and at the same time criticizing the crony capitalism that is a political machine that says, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine kind of deal, we'll keep you in office and you keep me in business. It's interesting to see this. And quite honestly, I'm still kind of trying to dissect it myself and wonder where this is really going to go, ultimately. Because we already know the Trump administration is at odds with the way Pope Francis sees the call of us as people of faith to respond to the needs of our culture. He sees what Trump is doing as not that model. Or let's put it this way. We don't know what Trump is doing. We don't know yet. The proposals put forth, he's simply seen it as this is a backwards way of doing this. Because humans suffer. There's something about human dignity that is diminished in that type of policy. So where this ultimately goes is going to be very interesting to watch, because Bannon certainly spins a good yarn and tells interesting, compelling stories in all of this, and keeps talking about how, you know, capitalism has gotten out of control and this and this and this, and the political angles in this, because, you know, we all think we're Puritans. Well, let's be honest. We all think we have the way. I mean, if or at least you should. You should. If you don't, think you've found the way and you're still trying to struggle into it, then you probably should. Now, for me, I'm going to be the first to admit I may know the path, but I don't stay on it. I meander. I try. I really try. But I get distracted. And right now, I am in a time of prayer and fasting that I started on All Saints Day, and this is going to go through Christmas for me, and it's been focused. I've stayed on the path, praise God, pretty effectively. And I'm immersing myself in spiritual reading. I'm immersing myself in prayer, daily mass, all of these things that can keep me focused. God willing, I'll sustain this, because it's proven positive for me to embrace this, at least through this time. But the position of this type of conservative righteousness, and I really can't say it any other way than that, that there's this idealism of this is the righteous way to do things. The left, all they're going to do is lie, or they're going to be, even some within our ranks are crony. They're intermingled into government so much that you don't know where one begins and the other one ends. It's a little disconcerting to me to hear this type of criticism, because again, I mean, I think that you got to listen to the criticism. You want to know what someone is really, really dealing with. What are they criticizing? What are they challenging? Very revealing. So it's the Catholic think tank. He was welcomed there. He made a presentation, but I don't think that this is Pope Francis' type of policy, nor do I think it's that of the church. Time is going to tell, as is with everything, where this ultimately leads, but I think that we have to keep a healthy distance. And as I say, you know, there is a rendering to Caesar, no doubt, while at the same time, I believe in a very distinctive separation to say, my faith is my faith, and I'm going to be there first and foremost. I will be politically active, and I will do what I need to maintain an active role in my citizenry, but we really got to make sure that we don't intermingle that more than is necessary, or we're going to have crony Catholicism. Back with more in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
If you enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Been talking this afternoon about media, about the manipulation of media, about what we saw happen in this election, what we see happening now as we transition to a media player, major media player with Breitbart. Steve Bannon coming into this dynamic. And I've been talking a lot, as I've always talked, and there are those who are like, Leo, why do you ask these questions? What's your real opinion? Well, first off, if I'm asking these questions, it's because I'm challenging my own opinion. Please understand that. That's one thing I'm doing. I'm challenging myself. I think I've tried to say that I've really tried to stack up my beliefs and go, which of these really stick? And which of these really fall into the heart of the church? Really fall into the heart. Not on an extremity, if that at best, but are really there in the heart. And really ask the questions of why, even as Catholics, why do we believe this? Why do we believe this? Where's the consistent ethic that allows this logic to persist? And it has persisted for 2,000 years. So where is it? And if it doesn't seem as though there's a connective tissue there, then there's probably something I'm missing. Because if this doesn't necessarily add up, it's certainly going to not add up to those on the outside looking in. And we can't use some kind of crazy excuse, well, it's You'll see it once you're inside. And I know St. Augustine says the gift of understanding is faith, and I've experienced that, and I know, but there still has to be some compelling understanding of the at least the reason, the as I call them, the why behind the what's, the reasons for why we believe what we believe. What's the why? What is that why? If that why is reasoned, here's the thing. Even within the realm of grace and supernatural sacramentality, all of these things that are still at the essence and heart of what we believe, but if we can package this, and this is what I say, if we can package our faith in a strictly humanistic form, if we can start there, if we could say, we're good humanists, we're just going to be good humanists. Let's do that. Because I don't think you could look at the life of Christ and say he wasn't a good humanist. He was an amazing humanist. And this is what was his attractor. And it was also what was his detractor. Because there were those who said, he's doing this humanist thing too good. And he has to be stopped. Because now he's gaining influence. Kind of what we were talking about before with this, where's the manipulation? It wasn't because of manipulation. It was because this was truth. This was the purest of truth. This was grace. This was the heart and mind of God. This was Christ doing what he did in such a powerful way on this earth that it became a threat. Now, there's this old, could you be convicted of being a Christian? Well, the one thing I would ask is, are you legitimately a threat? Right? If If something you're doing appears to be threatening, and it doesn't have to be threatening to the authorities, it doesn't have to be threatening to government, I'm not trying to say going to be an anarchist, that's not what I'm saying. Is it a threat to conventional wisdom? Is it a threat to something that you have stood firmly on? Are you threatening that? Because it should. Because the challenge of that balancing point, and you've heard me say this, I've been talking about this for years upon years. This is nothing new. I didn't just change my mind. I think there are those who even think, like, where are you coming from, Leo? What is all this about? It's nothing new. If you've listened to me, if you've followed what I've been about for any time at all, you know that these are the things that I've discussed for a long, long time, because these are the questions that I've asked. So all I'm asking is that we do it together and we say, can we challenge ourselves? Can we threaten ourselves? Because that balance point is delicate. And it's threatening, it should be threatening to be there, especially because the wider platforms that we think we've stood so firmly on before may be really out of balance. Might be really out of balance. But we've learned to stand firmly on them because, well, that's what everybody else is doing. So even if at first we met that with a little bit of, this might feel not necessarily so centered, but okay, this seems to be the path, which is skewed a bit, but you know, that's kind of part of this because it's not necessarily supposed to be comfortable. Right, but not in that way. It's not supposed to be comfortable because it challenges our selfishness. In some cases, selfishness is even fed through some of those platforms that are out of balance that still one could argue into the umbrella, under the umbrella. But unless you're seeing the full spectrum on that fulcrum, and you're able to understand that squarely in the center is where you need to be, and the threat that is to the imbalanced left and right factions that even say, well, this is Catholic, kind of what I was talking about with the Breitbart perspective. So it's tough to do this, but I think we got to ask ourselves good questions. We got to say, is this right based on what I understand? Not me trying to, I can kind of shave my faith around and fit it into this box. That's what I said through the election. Look at these four components. It's a tiny little door. It's all hinged on human dignity. That's the first. Is this an affront to human dignity? Is humanity, again, just be a good humanist, is humanity in its essence of that which is required to be human? Is there something that is degraded here or challenged in any way? If so, it cannot stand. So when I ask questions about, because I hear this and we've heard it forever. We don't have to support laws that are unjust. Abortion, same-sex marriage, which has been approached from the faithful, let's air quote the faithful. It's been said, well, these are unjust positions of the government. Therefore, we don't have to abide. But we will abide when it comes to immigration because they're illegal. Well, they're here illegally. I'm all for legal immigration, but illegal immigration? No. It's because it's a law. So all I'm saying is, which is it, Sonny? If I freeze, I can't be in motion. And if I hit the ground, I'm going to be in motion, right? Back to the paradox that is presented so brilliantly by the Coen brothers and Raising Arizona. Which is it? Is it this or that? Because, you know, and then there's this interesting, well, these laws, because they're intrinsically evil, they must be opposed, but the state from prudential judgment has this. No, then don't say it's because it's the law. Just simply say it's because you don't want those people here deep down. We're all immigrants. As I said many times, none of us, not one, has sprung from the ground of the United States. That has not happened. We're an immigrant people. So either we have a consistent ethic and therefore credibility, because that's the only way we have real credibility, is by having a consistent ethic, or we bounce all over the map and we pick and choose and we decide what we want to believe, and no one can trust us because it looks like we're talking out of both sides of our mouth when we do that. Abortion laws? We don't know. That's crazy. We don't need to do that. But immigration laws? Well, that's the law. What? I'm all for legal immigration. But these illegals, we gotta do something about that. Which then my question is, what, do you want to deport them? 10 million people? Bye. Because is that what is the humane thing to do? Is that dignified? Is that how dignity is at play? I just think we got to think about this from a consistent ethic of humanity. Start to try to be a good humanist. Just start there. And then see where grace leads you into understanding, oh, human dignity. If it's compromised in any way, shape, or form, we got to be consistent on that, and we got to realize what that looks like, and we got to stand in solidarity with those who are potentially compromised through this. You want credibility? You want to really have influence? Do you want to change the world? Start there. And see what happens when we get on that page. Now we have a real platform to move something. That's all we have time for this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.